88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So maybe you were a Mad Men fan, or you were addicted to Breaking Bad, or you're losing sleep over the fate of Frank and Claire. Well, if so, then maybe you think we're in a golden age of television. Well, for years, TV was considered the lowest of low art. Back in 1961, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, a guy named Newton Minow, described television as a vast wasteland. Now, there's plenty of trash on TV these days, but also some of the world's finest work in video and film. The connection between high art and the origins of TV is the subject of a new book that accompanies an exhibition that's currently at the Jewish Museum in New York. Dr. Maurice Berger looks at the early years of American television from the 1940s through the 1970s and the influence of the avant-garde and modernism on this medium that has come to dominate American culture. The book and the exhibition are called Revolution of the Eye, Modern Art and the Birth of American Television. Maurice Berger is research professor and chief curator at the University of Maryland Baltimore County's Center for Art, Design, and Visual Culture, and he joins me today on the line from the Argo Studios in New York. Maurice, welcome back to the show.
Oh, honored to be here.
So you write in the very beginning of the book that you observe a parallel between the rise of television and the visual dynamism of modern art. Talk about what you mean by that, and would that rise in the dynamism of modern art have been possible without this emerging medium of television?
Well, I think that modern art was already established. The thing to think about is the way in which television and modern art became mutually beneficial forces, starting really at the very early days of television. And in this sense, the early networks were available in the big cities, but because of the way television was being licensed, there was a real tendency to produce programming toward the network affiliates in the big cities, because in the middle of the country there was not a lot of television in the early days. The result of that was that the pioneers of television were thinking about it in more urban terms, in some ways in more modern terms. And they looked to modern art, they were fascinated by it, as something that could help them perhaps prove that television was a discerning medium. So they began to employ modern artists like Ben Shahn and Warhol, for example, at CBS, to produce design campaigns. They put artists on programs as early as the late the early 40s, but certainly by the late 40s, artists were appearing regularly on television, and even museums were getting involved. By the early 50s, the Museum of Modern Art appeared on television on average of once a week. So television gave artists a space to present their ideas to the world, and artists maybe gave them something like discernment. It gave them a sense that they can show the world that they were not just trafficking in garbage, but they were trafficking in serious programming.
Yeah, I was fascinated to read that artists like Pablo Picasso and Alexander Calder, Georgia O'Keeffe, these folks, their work inspired sets for things like the Dinah Shore Show. So it wasn't just the Museum of Modern Art programs about modern art, but it was the popular mass appeal kinds of variety shows that were incorporating elements of some of the biggest names in modern art and of all time.
I think there were several reasons for that, but I think the Dinah Shore Show is a good example of how that worked. For two seasons, in 53 and 54, periodically, Dinah Shore and her stage designers dreamed up these stage sets that were inspired by, as you mentioned, O'Keeffe and Alexander Calder and Surrealism, Picasso. I think one was even inspired by Matisse. And Look magazine covered that particular fascinating little moment in American television and said, Dinah Shore is making modern art available to millions of Americans across the country who might not have access to modern art in museums or might not even care. But the flip side of that was that modern art was making the Dinah Shore Show look particularly classy. You know, it gave a note of seriousness. And Shore herself was a very serious and committed performer. She had strong political opinions, embraced the civil rights movement. But she also embraced this idea of newness and of artistic integrity. And that comes across, I think, quite beautifully in those stage sets.
And Andy Warhol is a figure that recurs throughout this book. You mentioned his work designing things for advertisements for programs on CBS and NBC. He did a cover for TV Guide. But then as his career progressed and he died in the late 80s, I guess 1987.
87, yes.
He was very much inspired and animated in his own work by this medium of television. He was even on an episode of The Love Boat, which was fascinating to read in your book. So he and television had a very close connection, didn't they?
They did. In fact, while most of the avant-garde artists who embraced or engaged television in the 50s and 60s kind of lost interest in it, Warhol never did. To the day he died, he was almost obsessed with television, not just as something he watched, but something that he could create. And he wasn't thinking of it in terms of, you know, educational television or public broadcasting. He wanted to get right in there and get on the Love Boat and have a feature role on the Love Boat, or there's a famous, hilariously funny Braniff commercial that he stars in with the boxer Sonny Liston. That's hilarious. I mean, he just loved television. The absolutely great story about Warhol and television was and I quote this in the book, was that he once admitted to an interviewer that he was so jealous of people who got to produce television on a daily basis that whenever he would do an interview show or whenever he would go on a television show, he would seethe internally thinking, I want to do this. I mean, there was this real fascination for him with television. He was also the artist who talked about, you know, the proverbial 15 minutes of fame that we were all entitled to. I think he saw television as very much a manifestation of a medium that could give you those 15 minutes of fame instantly, and he capitalized on that. He also made artwork about television. So in every imaginable way, Warhol's mind was very locked up in the idea that TV mattered.
Dr. Maurice Berger from UMBC is the author of Revolution of the Eye, Modern Art and the Birth of American Television. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Maryland Morning here on 88.1 WIPR. You say at one point early in the book that ads turned out to be the hallmark of artistic experimentation. So it's not just the programming that we're talking about its connection to modern art, but commercials were a very important dimension of this whole evolution, weren't they?
They were. If you think about a commercial, they were as short as 15 seconds back in the 50s. They tend to be a little longer today, as long as a minute. Really, so many commercials then and now are not particularly artistically interesting. But ad agencies, some of them were very creative and wanted to push the envelope, and they hired very interesting people to art direct and to direct commercials. One of the great commercial directors was actually the brilliant American designer Saul Bass. Saul Bass did some of the most brilliant and extraordinary title sequences for American films. And he did a commercial, for example, for Men in Baby Lotion that was 1 minute of pure artistic brilliance. I mean, literally equal to anything I've seen on film in some ways in the early 60s. But if you think about it another way, the stakes are also a little bit lower in commercials because, you know, you're selling a product and sometimes you go for broke. And some companies were actually interested in pursuing artists and designers who were on the cutting edge. Great example of that is Schraffs. Many of our listeners may not remember Schraffs. It was a restaurant chain and was also very famous for its ice cream sundaes. And the president of Schraffs back in the late 60s thought, well, why don't we have Warhol do a commercial for us? So Andy is commissioned, and he does this totally radical commercial with popping colors and this seething ice cream sundae and this sort of lustful, seething, array of colors and abstract imagery, and then the sundae sort of materializes in the middle of it. And when they asked him later on, you know, why did you commission Warhol? He said, well, because I got two for the price of one. I got a commercial, and then I got a work of art. And looking at that very rare commercial, we're the first museum to show it in years, and one of, I think, two museums to have ever had the opportunity to show it over the last 50 years. You look at that commercial today, and it's as fresh and dynamic and extraordinary as it was back when it was produced in 1968.
You have a fascinating timeline at the end of the book, and you observe that in 1948, there were about 172,000 television sets in the United States. By 1969, 600 million people watched the first transmission from the moon. And way back, way before any of that occurred, there was an architect and artist named Frederick Kiesler who back in 1926 predicted that telemuseums would one day send art through the airwaves. I wonder if the internet is this telemuseum that Mr. Kiesler was imagining. It seems incredibly prescient to me that he would think of this connection between art and sending it out to the public over the airways. And of course, museums now are using video tools and video technology in all sorts of ways. Do you think it's come full circle from the early 20s?
Well, you know, I'm also wondering, I think it's a great question. It makes me wonder if Kiesler wouldn't have been completely in agreement that television might have actually met the end, that particular goal, given all the art and the artists, given how museums use the medium. There was a polling of American museums back in 1952 during the television project, which was set up by the Museum of Modern Art to figure out whether they should collect television. And the vast majority of American museums were already engaging the medium. They were, in effect, going on television in the 1950s and in the 1960s. But I do think that, I think you're right, and I think it's a very good question. I think that what the internet has done and has allowed for is it's broken down, to some extent, the need to please demographic groups. Television is all about the demographic. You know, it's Nielsen numbers and the demographic. We've heard that over and over again for the past 70 years. But with the internet, it's possible, and it often is quite the case, that museums, big, small, rich, poor, are able to disseminate ideas about art and culture to millions and millions of people at very little cost in many instances, to sort of make good on what that admittedly fruitful but problematic relationship between television and modern art, to make good on that promise, to have a public medium that allows for the dissemination of avant-garde ideas, cutting-edge art and film, and for that matter, cutting-edge television, I think it has come full circle. But I think it's also important to remember that extraordinary moment in that early history of television when anything was possible and modern art became one of those possibilities. At that moment, definitely is maybe the midpoint. It precedes what we're talking about now, but it was no less an important part of the story and no less what Kiesler, I think, imagined.
Maurice Berger is research professor and chief curator at UMBC's Center for Art, Design, and Visual Culture and the author of Revolution of the Eye, Modern Art and the Birth of American Television, a book that accompanies an exhibition of the same name. That exhibition will be at the Jewish Museum in New York until the end of September, and it'll be coming to UMBC next year. We've got a link to more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. This is a fascinating book, Maurice, and I look forward to seeing the exhibition next time I'm up in Manhattan.
Thank you, and I look forward to meeting you and taking you through the show.
It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more coming up. Stick around.